Our first case for argument today is 21-1435, BMW of North America v. Terum Technologies. Mr. Lavenu, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. This is Lionel Lavenu from Finnegan for BMW, and we're here to talk about an IPR appeal that deals with three issues, three claim groups. I'd like to take the first claim group that we talk about. It's actually in our briefing. It's listed as claim group number 2, and it's claims 10 through 12. And the reason I've selected claim group number 2 as the first item to talk about is because of the clarity of the error by the board. And that is, this deals with measuring a range rate. And in measuring a range rate, it was argued by BMW that the prior art references a relative velocity. And when one of ordinary skill in the art understands that under mere math, a relative velocity is a rate of change over a rate of time with a direction, that's the same exact thing as a range rate, which is a rate of range over a rate of time without a direction. The board at the oral hearing specifically asked me whether or not a calculation was required in order to convert the relative velocity of the Kodabe reference into a range rate, which is in the claim. And I specifically said that no calculation is required. Not only did I say that at the oral hearing, but we also briefed that no calculation was required. Despite the level of clarity on that exact issue as to whether or not a calculation is required, the board found that a calculation was required. And because a calculation was required, they found that we had not satisfied the obviousness requirements for claims 10 through 12. So that is simply an error that the board made, that one of ordinary skill in the art would have understood that a relative velocity is a disclosure of a range rate, the only difference being the relative velocity has a directional aspect. So that is the first, and we believe the simplest argument that we present with regard to claims 10 through 12. As far as the second claim group, it is a similar issue, but perhaps not as clearly an error. And that is, the second claim group that I'd like to talk about is what we refer to as claim group number 3, and that's claims 5 and 9. Now, in the original petition that we filed, we explained that there was the BMW brochure, and when the BMW brochure was combined with the Schmidt reference, that satisfied claims 5 and 9. The board found that we had met our prima facie showing that there was unpatentability. And
Mr. Lavenu, let me please back you up to your first argument. I'm on the appendix during the hearing, pages 1027 to 1028. And I guess I'm not sure that it's as clear from the, as you're suggesting, that no math was involved in ascertaining or getting to the range rate. In that testimony, or not, it's not testimony since you're a lawyer, but in your attorney argument, I guess the judge says that he or she, Judge Tornquist, wasn't clear what you said in your reply and what had to happen, that there still has to be some math that's completed from the data. And you say, well, there's math in that there's a math. It's a mathematical fact. And then you say it's different from the change in yaw rate where there's a calculation, but the range rate, there is no calculation. When we refer to math, we're just saying simple math. I guess simple math is still math, Mr. Lavenu. I don't understand your argument today and how it seems to mesh with the actual hearing testimony or hearing argument.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's perfectly understandable in that perhaps we did not use the right term when Dr. Eskedarian explained what he meant by mere math. And what Dr. Eskedarian meant when he explained that it's mere math, he means that if you look at it, then you can see that that range rate and relative velocity are the same, and that there's no calculation. So, for example, on page 46 of our brief, we have a demonstrative that we used at the oral hearing with respect to the question that you just mentioned. And in that demonstrative, it lists for the board the calculations, or not the calculations, but the formula for relative velocity and range rate. And
Mr. Levin, doesn't the demonstrative itself say that it's not evidence?
The demonstrative
at the bottom of the demonstrative, I thought it said this is not evidence.
The demonstrative itself is not evidence, Your Honor, but the demonstrative does cite to the evidence of record, which is the Escudarian deposition.
Yeah, but the Escudarian deposition doesn't have the same information in it that the demonstrative has.
That is true,
Your Honor. I read your expert's declaration to be, well, math is math. Everybody knows that, but he didn't explain why. And I understood you to be using the demonstrative to explain why.
Well, if I limit it only to what Dr. Escudarian said in his supplemental declaration, which is paragraph 101, Dr. Escudarian said...
What page is that in the record, please?
That is page 962. And so if we look at that under paragraph 101... Dr. Escudarian says, if one simply views, this is paragraph 101, if one simply views the relative velocity without considering the velocity's direction of motion, they will see the object range rate. So that is Dr. Escudarian illustrating that it can be seen from the formula. So the confusion that the board had is that he says right before that, only mere math is needed. So in his mind, when he says math, he doesn't mean a calculation. What he means is that it's merely looking at the formula. It's a mathematical fact. It's a fact of nature, not that it's a calculation. That's what Dr. Escudarian intended to say with his mere math analogy. Perhaps
That's what you would like him to have said, but that isn't in fact what he said. And this is a substantial evidence question. How the board understood his testimony, we reviewed for substantial evidence, and he, quite frankly, didn't say what you wished he had said. He didn't say what was in your demonstrative. He said something different. And it's hard for me to imagine that the board didn't have substantial evidence for its conclusion, and when he said mere math is needed, that required a calculation. Mere math wouldn't be needed to look at two things and know that they are absolutely identical. If you had an identical twin sitting here, I wouldn't need mere math to figure that out.
Well, we believe, Your Honor, that what Dr. Escudarian says when he explains what he meant by mere math is needed is not that a calculation is needed, but what he says directly after that, which is, quote, if one simply views the relative velocity without considering the velocity's direction of motion, they will see the object range rate, end quote. So that's him quoting specifically what one would understand from the formula.
I can see how that's your argument, but the problem is you're stuck with the actual expert declaration, which says mere math is needed. How do I conclude that the board didn't have substantial evidence for its determination when the declaration actually said that? You're telling me now it said something, but I shouldn't understand it to have its plain meaning, but I don't review it in the first instance. It's a substantial evidence question. The board reviewed it. It says what it says.
But the reason that we're trying to explain this, Your Honor, is Dr. Escudarian did not say mere math is needed in a calculation. What Dr. Escudarian said is mere math is needed by looking what one would understand from looking at the formula. So perhaps it was not the best phraseology.
Well, when you say that, Mr. Lavenue, you're suggesting to me that there are two ways to understand what your expert was saying. So let's assume for purposes of argument there are two ways of understanding what your expert was trying to say. Why does your version of what he was trying to say prevail?
It's because our version is what one of ordinary skill in the art would have understood.
Where is the substantial evidence saying that one of ordinary skill in the art would understand what your expert was saying?
Well, the substantial evidence is that when one looks at the formula, one has to go no further. The formula itself illustrates without math that one can get the range rate from the relative velocity. We can all see that. We have to go no further. And so one of ordinary skill in the art can and also look at the formula.
Well, I don't think you're answering my question. I mean, you're unwilling to grant that there might be a second understanding, that is to say that some kind of math, meaning some type of a calculation, is necessary. And so let's assume that there is unclarity on the record, and if the unclarity on the record is deposited there as a result of the petitioner's instance, then why is it that the petitioner's view of the ambiguity should prevail?
Well, the reason that it goes with the petitioner and not with the patent owner is because it's what one of ordinary skill in the art,
That's being circular, because you're saying one of ordinary skill in the art would understand that no math calculation is necessary. But your expert, as I believe the chief judge has pointed out, made a statement that certainly could be construed by an ordinary reader to say that a mathematical calculation is necessary. Now, if it was a goof, then suppose that that goof would have been recognized at the moment it was happening, and someone might have said, well, let us be clear. At the time he was making his statement in 101, presumably that was carefully prepared by counsel.
Well, perhaps if I approach it from a different perspective, Your Honor, the expert not only said that one simply has to look at the relative velocities to get the range rate, but also
where did he say exactly that?
It's paragraph 1.
Okay, 101, I see that.
Yes, paragraph 101 is he explained what he meant by mere math by saying one simply looks at the formula. But to even confirm that, if one looks at paragraph 99 and 100, he also explains that it's basic physics. And so when he says when you look at a formula, it's basic physics to understand what the formula means. And in paragraph 100, he says, as such, quote, the relative velocity disclosed by Kodabe already includes the claimed object range rate, end quote. So one can see there that he's not referring to a calculation. He's referring to a fact. And the fact is that the formula from Kodabe already includes the range rate, which is in the claim. And so no calculation is needed.
Mr. Lavenue, your time is up and you're into your rebuttal time. Do you want to save or do you want to touch on any of your other arguments?
So Your Honor, for the other two arguments, they are similarly situated where the board used a higher requirement for obviousness than one of ordinary skill in the art. And I'll save the remaining 2 minutes for rebuttal to address any arguments that my colleague, Mr. Bach, raises.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lavenue. Mr. Bach, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Andy Bach from Bartlett-Beck on behalf of Carum Technologies. The through line of BMW's various arguments on appeal and today is to ask this Court to reweigh the evidence considered by the Board anew with little deference to the Board's various factual findings, and to ask this Court to second-guess the Board's determinations of which arguments were properly before. There's no basis to do so, particularly given the governing standards of review. The Board's final written decision set forth careful consideration of the parties' positions and weighed the evidence, and on critical issues, chose to credit the position of our expert over that of BMW's. Those are precisely the sort of determinations that are committed to the Board in the first instance, and the mere fact that BMW wishes the Board had weighed the evidence differently is no basis to grant relief on appeal. This Court should affirm.
Mr. Bach, you know, almost all of Mr. Lavin's argument was dealt with the mere math issue on the second claim group. So he is pointing out in his mind that the Board made a mistake when the Board said, as a fact finding, that a calculation is necessary. What calculation was the Board talking about?
I think the Board, and I'm going to turn to Claim Group 2, so I think the Board was addressing that some inferential step. So while there may be a mathematical, if you credit BMW's expert position, there's a mathematical relationship between relative velocity and range and range rate, which is what the claims actually require, and that there's an inferential step, a mathematical relationship that would allow you to derive one of those things. So whether it's characterized as a calculation or mere math or mere physics doesn't matter. The fact remains that an inferential step is needed. And the reason that's important is...
What's the inferential step?
I think the position of BMW would be it's to ignore the directional component of relative velocity. But again, that doesn't get BMW where it needs to go because it's taken the position consistently, both in front of this court, and this is on their brief, page 47 and 48, and below, appendix 350. BMW's position has always been clear. It does not need to provide a motivation to calculate object range rate in Kodabi. So if it's not going to provide that motivation, it must demonstrate that Kodabi itself uses object range rate. And on that point, the concession that BMW's counsel made at argument, while certainly not the only evidence supporting the board's position, however, it's fatal. The board asked this very
question. You only need the motivation if you agree that there is this step of ignoring direction, right?
That's correct, Your Honor, but I don't think...
What Mr. Lavender's argument is that there is an inherent teaching, like sort of almost like anticipation, there's an inherent teaching in the reference, period, as a result of mathematics.
Well, I'd say first...
If his position on that fails, if we agree with your view and what the board's view was that some additional step was required, then he isn't even arguing that he could prevail on the motivation to combine. He's not challenged that. I think all of his eggs are in the basket saying there was an absolute disclosure in the reference of the limitation.
Well, I think that was true until the reply brief where BMW has tried to suggest now that even if some inferential step is required, as BMW conceded repeatedly, mere math, mere physics, it could be figured out. Even if that step is required, since it would have been simple, an artisan would have been able to do it. So I do think the...
Well, I appreciate that argument. I frankly had a lot of trouble in this case figuring out who made which argument when and who had waived what. And so my head was spinning by the time I got to the reply brief. But on the...
Understood, Your Honor.
Taking the case the way it was presented to us on this particular issue, Mr. Lavin, I mean, he can say something when he gets up on rebuttal, but it seemed to me that his case is over unless he can make the case that math means math and no additional calculation is necessary.
I think that's right, Your Honor. And again, page 350, this small logical step argument, that's their argument below. They never made this small logical step argument until this reply brief, so it is indeed waived. And I think you're correct to focus on this narrow issue on claim group two. But whether framed as inherency, which is not how BMW argued it below, even inherency itself is still a factual question. And on a substantial evidence review, it's hard to fault the board for concluding that Kodabi does not disclose object range rate when petitioner's counsel admitted that it uses relative velocity, not range rate. And that's from the oral argument, page 1028. But then again, to the extent they're trying to discredit the board, it's hard to criticize the board for deciding that a math inferential step was needed when that is what BMW said time and again, starting with the petition. Page 106 of the petition, mere math. Page 774, paragraph 99 of BMW's expert declaration, again, acknowledging that an inferential step was required. And the same position both in the reply by BMW, page 350, and again at the oral argument. So whether it's been characterized in different ways and it's been characterized slightly different here today, none of those particular fine distinctions matter. The key fact is the concession that Kodabi does not use object range rate itself, the board's own finding after reviewing Kodabi that it does not use object range rate, and then whether it's mere math, mere physics, or it can be figured out, some step is needed, and that is fatal to the way BMW has approached claim group two. If there's no other questions on claim group two, I want to turn back to claim group one. Claim group one, the board's ruling rests on multiple independent grounds, any one of which is adequate to affirm. But I want to say a word first about waiver, because I think the board's finding is very straightforward there. The board concluded that BMW failed to provide any reasoned explanation of why one of ordinary skill would have wanted to calculate lateral acceleration rate using a change in yaw rate when such data is already available from a lateral acceleration sensor. That's page 30. Now, we pointed out that failure in our response brief, and in reply, BMW, for the very first time, offered its higher confidence argument. That's exactly the kind of reply argument that is improper under the board's trial guidance, and none of the cases that either side cite on waiver, whether it's Apple or the others, allow a petitioner to come in and backfill and provide a motivation to combine for the first time in reply. And you can just see how that would prove unworkable if you could merely provide the headline, a skilled practitioner would be motivated to combine with no explanation. The patent owner comes back and points out the failure of proof, and then the reply is provided for the first time. Whatever an appropriate reply argument is under this court's precedent and the board's practices, that cannot be it. And so the
Mr. Brockett, I understood Mr. Lavenue, on behalf of his client's main worry over this particular group, his view that the board applied an incorrect legal test to the question, that instead of looking to a motivation to combine issue, the board sort of took a lead from what your client's counsel said the oral argument and turned this into a reasonable expectation of success case. Didn't you understand him to be making that argument?
I think that's one of their arguments, and I'll address that, Your Honor.
As I read the brief, it was the first argument that showed up on the group, so I took it to be the lead argument. What's your response to that argument? If indeed the board has said, well, we're not going to worry about a motivation to combine here. We think there's no reasonable expectation of success. We'd have a very different case here on appeal, would we not?
Potentially, but not one, Your Honor, that I think would affect the outcome. So first, the board did not use the phrase reasonable expectation of success, and I don't think it's the fairest reading or the appropriate reading of the board's opinion, which instead, in the relevant analysis, appears to turn on credibility determinations, crediting our expert on whether there would have been a motivation to combine. And I think that's the best way. The passing reference at oral argument to reasonable expectation of success, I don't think alters that the board's opinion focuses on the failure to establish a motivation to combine. So that's one. Two, as I've already indicated, this point is fairly academic. There are multiple other grounds to sustain the board's finding, including that the prosecution history taught away from this motivation to combine, a finding on which the board credited our expert.
Well, isn't it the prosecution history that drives the board to want to have the how question answered?
The
prosecution history raises a question as to the pertinence of the formula in the reference that's trying to be used.
I think that's right, Your Honor.
So the board is saying, well, given that fact, then somebody has to explain to me how this would function in the claim.
I believe that's correct. And the testimony or the portion of the transcript that BMW complains about is simply a response from our counsel to a question of the board. And that was my third point, Your Honor, which is the board is free, and this is the very holding of FanDuel, which I would suggest.
In all fairness to Mr. Lavenue has a hook in the board's opinion at JA-29 when the board says petitioner doesn't explain sufficiently how. He grabs onto that to say, whoa, the board here is asking the how question, not the why question. And when you ask the how question, you're asking reasonable expectation of success.
Even if the board, though, if the hook is correct, Your Honor, the board is free to reject BMW's obviousness case on any grounds it sees fit, regardless of the arguments advanced by us. So I like to think that we're capable counsel and we marshal good arguments, but if the board spots a gap in BMW's obviousness case, it is free to reject the petition on that ground. That is the very holding of FanDuel, and in FanDuel itself, the patent owner didn't even dispute the issue and didn't offer any expert testimony. And the board still rejected the petitioner's position, and this court affirmed saying, yes, because the burden always remains on the petitioner, BMW here, and it never shifts. If the board spots another issue, it's free to rely on that. But Your Honor, regardless, there still are separate independent grounds in Claim Group 1, so elevating this reasonable expectation of success issue still wouldn't change the outcome, because the board was in its rights to credit our expert's view that the prosecution history and the prior art taught that the measured lateral acceleration was more reliable, and so this so-called check would not make any sense. Let me just touch briefly on a couple other Claim 1 related items before saying something about Claim Group 3. On Claim Group 1, there's also, and Judge, you mentioned the lead argument in the opening brief was reasonable expectation of success. In the reply brief, it's the suggestion that the board applied the wrong obviousness standard. Now, I underlined that when I read it, but I don't think there's, and the only page BMW points to is Appendix 29. I don't think there's a sentence there, and BMW doesn't identify one, that even arguably misstates the law of obviousness. Two additional quick points on Claim Group 1 that were raised in the reply. One is the suggestion that the board should have credited the testimony of Dr. Eskandarian in his deposition as to how to reconcile conflicting values. That's wrong for a number of reasons, including for the fact that it doesn't counter our expert's view that measured lateral acceleration is more reliable, but it doesn't matter. It's waived. BMW in its reply never cited Dr. Eskandarian's testimony as part of its motivation to buy, and it's too late to do so now. Second, in reply, BMW also makes much of safety as a motivation, and again, safety was never raised as a justification to combine the Shuzu with the brochure. And you look at Appendix 88 to 90, 99 to 101, and 340 to 344, those are the key pages discussing this motivation. Safety is never mentioned. It's too late to do so now. The only page BMW points to is page 337, which was discussing an unrelated issue about the motivation to combine Schmidt and the brochure. So while BMW may regret not raising a safety argument below, it's too late to do so now. Since I'm coming up on time, I'll just say a quick word about Claim Group 3. Claim Group 3, I read BMW's opening brief as an invitation for this court to simply reweigh the evidence. But there's a key shift in reply, and BMW now seems to be suggesting that we somehow conceded that the brochure taught this predetermined limit on lateral acceleration. Respectfully, that is not a fair reading of the record, and I would direct this court to pages 307 to 312 of our response and pages 1127 and 1132 of our expert declaration. This was one of the most contested issues below, and the board simply elected to credit the careful explanation of our expert over the one paragraph and one sentence position of petitioner's expert. The substantial evidence more than supports the board's finding. Unless there are any further questions, for the reasons set forth in our brief and discussed today, we'd ask this court to affirm.
I'm on page 307. So where is it that you raised this argument? Where is it that you disputed whether or not the brochure disclosed?
It's 307 to 312, and so there's numerous reasons given. First, if you go to 311, where it discusses that, it's starting with the paragraph 310 at the bottom, the import, which is that this was one of the reasons. Our expert gave multiple reasons, and that was on pages 1127 and 1132.
I'm sorry, I don't see what you're talking about. Can you please walk me through it? Where on page 311 do you say that you raised this argument?
Sure.
It looks to me like the board came up with it on its own, which may very well be within its purview to do since they had the burden of proof, but you've instead defended on the ground that you in fact raised it, so the board didn't come up with it on its own. So I'd like to see precisely where you raised it.
Sure. So it's 309 at the bottom, pulling up to 310. A person of ordinary skill would understand the brochure's reference data cannot be the same.
Is this JA 309?
309 to top of 310.
Yeah, I can't find whatever it is that you are reading.
We're talking about different pieces of paper, I think, sir.
I'm in appendix page 310, page 56 of our response.
All right.
A person, so here's just a quote. This is one of the arguments we advanced. person of ordinary skill would understand the brochure's disclosed reference data cannot be the same as the claimed lateral acceleration predetermined limit. So that's one place where we discuss that.
I'm sorry, I can't find wherever you're reading.
That's at the top of page 310.
Top of page 310?
No.
Same on 309 with the paragraph starting for example. We explained that it cannot be the reference data, and this is with the discussion starting with assuming that the predetermined limit cannot be the reference data because the brochure provides that there's any deviation, there's breaking, and that would not work. So that's the discussion starting with the full paragraph on 309, for example. And then the last explanation, and again, this is what the board credited, starting at the bottom of 310, with the paragraph starting with the import, and the full paragraph that goes to 311, the reference data at best suggests intervening when multivariables are measured, and that means there cannot be a single variable, a lateral acceleration limit, as the claims provide. And then the punchline on page 312.
And I'm looking for what you just said. Where is that in the on 311?
The paragraph, the sentence starting or, comma, put another way, 6 lines from the bottom.
Okay.
And I'm happy to answer any questions, but the punchline.
What you just said a moment ago is your characterization of those lines, correct?
That's correct. I'm paraphrasing, Your Honor, but
characterizing, I believe.
Sure.
Okay.
I just close by saying I think a fair reading of these pages and the pages we cite to our expert declaration suggest that we contested hotly whether the predetermined limit reference was met by the brochure, and the board's decision to credit that testimony was entirely proper. Unless there are any questions, I'm long into my time, and I'll wrap up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bach. Mr. Lavenu, I'd like to restore additional rebuttal time because Mr. Bach went over. So, Joseph, how much time does Mr. Lavenu have left already? 2 minutes? Why don't you raise it up to 5 minutes?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. So first, to go back really quickly to Claim Group 2 and our mathematical calculation issue, I'll note that my colleague, Mr. Bach, he did not actually say upon questioning by Your Honors that a mathematical calculation is required. He simply said that we had argued that he thought that a mathematical calculation was required. In fact, he conceded that if one ignores the relative velocity, that is not a calculation, and that is our argument. There's no inferential step that's needed. So basically,
do you mean ignore the relative velocity or do you mean ignore the directional component?
Ignore the directional component, Your Honor. Correct.
Okay.
Thank you. And so I think that that really makes the point that even Mr. Bach recognizes that there even upon questioning, he did not argue that a mathematical calculation was required. And so that is our point for claim group number two. For claim groups number one and claim group number three, our arguments are really exactly as Judge Clevenger noted, and that is that the board seemed to create its own argument as to why it believed that both of these claim groups did not have what they required for there to be unpatentability, which they're entitled to do under FanDuel, but our argument is that they were not entitled to take an approach that's inconsistent with what one of ordinary skill in the art would have taken. And that is exactly what happened in both situations. For example, in claim group one, with respect to the lateral acceleration, whether or not the lateral acceleration is or is not factored in, and whether or not there was a reasonable expectation of success for the use of the lateral acceleration between the two references, the Shizu and BMW brochure, that was discussed by Dr. Escudarian in his deposition at Appendix 1169, where he goes into great detail explaining why one could use both of those lateral accelerations. It was then the patent owner that chose not to raise that argument in its reply brief, in its response brief, but the board then raised that issue for the first time at the hearing, and they then relied upon that. Karam then raised the argument based upon what the board did, and that is the violation that we're focusing on. It's not the fact that the board raised it for the first time. It's the fact that Karam jumped on, not Karam, I'm sorry, that the patent owner jumped on that, and the board is obligated to dismiss a patent owner's untimely argument raised for the first time at the oral argument, and that's the Dell v. Acceleron case. So that is what we believe happened at the claim, for the claim group one. For claim group three, this is another situation where the board seemed to have a very high level of curiosity about whether or not the predetermined limit that was disclosed in the BMW brochure did or did not include the level of detail that it thought was required for the lateral acceleration. But that, again, was an argument that we had addressed in our reply brief and in our responsive papers. And in fact, Dr. Dasker Eskaderian pointed specifically to the BMW brochure. Remember that the BMW brochure that's used here was for an actual functioning system in a BMW 7 series that was actually driving around and being used 4 years before the filing of the patent application. So this system that was described, when it refers to a predetermined limit and the use of lateral acceleration for that predetermined limit, one of ordinary skill in the art would certainly have understood, and in fact, I believe that the questioning by Mr. Bach even illuminated that fact, that he recognized that, and this was the quotations that Your Honors was asking Mr. Bach to find, all of those quotations, if you go back and look at those quotations, the patent owner acknowledges that the predetermined limit, one of the factors was lateral acceleration. They don't dispute that. So the reference data that's used for the predetermined limit, they don't dispute that it includes lateral acceleration. What they dispute is whether or not it includes this super high level of detail that they believe is required. And that super high level of detail is not required when all of the evidence indicates that one of ordinary skill in the art would have understood how the BMW brochure worked with the Schmidt reference. And this is the Pueblo case from the Court of Claims from 1964, which says...
Counsel, your problem is you argued, yes, that one of ordinary skill would have understood it, but you didn't proffer that evidence to the board in this instance. I mean, they found that you tried to argue this in the petition in a very cursory way without supporting evidence. Dr. Eskaderian had a single sentence of analysis, and they found that it was inadequate to meet your burden of proof. That all can be true even if Karam didn't dispute it. You had the burden.
Well, that is understood, Your Honor, but we did explain during the deposition of Dr. Eskaderian exactly the questions that the board had when they asked at the oral hearing. And that is on Appendix 1169 as well, where Dr. Eskaderian specifically explained why one would have used the lateral acceleration with a predetermined limit in the BMW brochure. And in fact, it's because Karam acknowledged at Appendix 310 that they never disputed that point on use of lateral acceleration. And at Appendix 1131, their expert also acknowledged that that could be used. It was this super high level of requirement that the board came up with that is not consistent with the PCETA. And that's the inconsistency that we're complaining about, is the board has to look at it not from their super omniscient view of obviousness, but more of what one of ordinary skill in the art would have understood. That's the complaint that we've raised here.
Okay, I think that concludes our time for today. I thank both counsel, and this case is taken under submission.